back on Downtown. Time for Message in the Bottle. Brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us on the telephone line. Hello, sir.
Hello. I was going to try and trick everybody and pretend I was in studio, but I'm on the telephone line. I'm super lucky I remembered to be in here because just about 10 minutes ago I was outside teaching my daughter how to fend off a potential boyfriend. By that I mean archery. I was teaching how to shoot a bow, and she showed enough proficiency that I think we might go with that. I think that's going to be the trick.
So you're feeling pretty safe going forward then?
No.
No. I mean, it might be more effective if you were standing there with the bow and arrow when suitors showed up.
Yeah, true story. My first long-term girlfriend, after my first visit to her parents' place, told me that her dad liked me, which came as quite as a surprise, given how surly he had acted. And I asked why, and she said, well, he didn't clean his gun collection in front of you. I said, oh.
Was that a short-term relationship as a result?
Well, I mean, shorter than my current one.
Uh-huh.
And longer than others. I made it long enough in that relationship to actually meet her dad, which was an accomplishment because I went to boarding school. So you had to, like, you know, when you went home for whatever vacation, then you had to travel to said locale that you're... Your boyfriend or girlfriend. She was in Long Island. She lived near Billy Joel, because of course she did. So I got to know the Long Island Railroad very early on, as well as Jersey Transit, which came in very handy later when I was traveling for work. So, you know, silver linings. Speaking of silver linings, we're here talking about wine. We're talking about Portugal. Keep them separated. I it just popped into my head today because, of course, silver linings of Portugal being separated from much of Europe and also sort of intercontinental trade because of, you know, them politics, and we'll get into that if we have time. But one of the things that made Portugal basically, it was sort of the first important wine region. I mean, it's several regions located in one country, but we of U.S. Descent sort of tend to think of small countries as, you know, regions in themselves because we're so vast. Portugal was the first one to kind of arrive on the American wine scene with grapes you couldn't pronounce and had no idea what the heck they were, which for wine geeks was great. We were like, thank God. I mean, we've had, you know, we were just, you know, how many times can you recommend a Pinot Noir? A lot, as it proves, in my over 20 years in the business, but like, you know, it was the first real chance to get tongue twisters and like, what are these places? What are these varieties? I don't even know what they are and where they come from. Because of course, prior to all of that new wave, which probably started about, you know, around the time that I kind of got into the wine trade, so two decades plus, we knew Portugal from Matus and Lancers, right? So these are, I guess I could call them famous, infamous, bubbly, sweet, low-alcohol wines that were broken out by the truly cultural elite back when you couldn't really get much else, unless you were one of the people who were actually tapped into the French wine scene and had a guy or had a, you know, a source, because otherwise it was really, that was it. But of course, Portugal, and port. I mean, I guess we'll hit port, but port we kind of already hit when we talked about appellations. But today I kind of want to talk about the Portugal that isn't fortified wine and isn't bubbly pink junk. So what they did was, as I was sort of mentioning, they kept the native varietals as opposed to, you know, we've talked about, for instance, the Tempranillo belt in Spain, where they basically ripped out so much of these other wonderful varieties in favor of Tempranillo, which grew easier and was, you know, was just more likely to give them income. And Tempranillo exists in Portugal. Tinto Rory is what it's called. So it's not like an unknown variety. It's very popular, but it's only one of dozens, really. It's kind of coming out now. Portugal has just a tremendous amount of great vineyard land, a lot of places that have granite and schist, which is great for like minerality in wine. We've talked a lot about granitic sites, Mont-Saint, Beaujolais, other places like that. So I'll just hit kind of some of the regions within Portugal that you might know or you might not know that I think are you know, kind of merit notice. To the far north, just south of Rias Baixas, Galicia, you have the Minho. This is the home of probably the second most famous Portuguese wine of note, which is Vinho Verde, green wine. It's the wettest region of all Portugal, which can lead to vines and grapes being what we call green, right, which is sort of underripe, hence the name of the wine. Now people are using more like trellis systems and disciplining their vines more. So there's actually like serious Vinho Verde now and the, you know, sort of lighter, more fun stuff. And some of the serious Vinho Verde is, I mean, it rivals Chablis in its minerality and freshness. So it's definitely worth noting. The grapes you see there, so this is, again, these are grapes not common to the American tongue. Azal, Loureiro, Tajadura, Arinto, and then the, I guess, more commonly known Alfarinho, which is the Portuguese equivalent of the Albarinho, which is grown in Rias Baixas in Spain, so just over the Minho River. It's an exciting place full of wines that are totally worth noting, and especially white wines, and white wines that are very applicable in, say, main coastal regions in summer. The Douro. The Douro is the source of the wines that go into port. It is a tremendously beautiful, trellised area where there is almost no soil, super steep slopes, hot, malaria is common. But the Romans liked it, and so they trellised it, and it sort of stuck. And then they grow the grapes there. They send it to the varying houses, and then they ship it down river and age it and make port. It's one of those things. But if you see the pictures of this, I mean, it's just thousands. It's like, imagine hillsides, but they all kind of look like they're pixelated almost, because there's these little square trellisy things on every hillside. It's absolutely gorgeous. And you can grow other crops there as well, because, again, it's basically, you know, they can kind of trap whatever soil they have in those. But the vines flourished because once you get below that soil, there ain't nothing except rock, and vines love horrible, harsh conditions, so vines flourished. It's hard to reach, though, so obviously the Duero and Douro River that we've talked about for the past couple weeks was really the main transport, which is why, I mean, it makes sense anyway because of the sort of commercial process of grapes growing and where you send them, but the river flows downstream, so that's the way the trade went, and it's just no coincidence. Yes, today they have, you know, vehicular traffic, but it's not real easy to reach. The grape quality rather varies extraordinarily widely there. And they have delimited that valley into the best zones, much as any other quality wine region has said, okay, the best grapes come from here, the worst grapes come from here. Vineyards are graded from A to F, with, really enough, I suppose, being the most paid the most for. So that's a region that is now starting to make, and again, in the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, serious dry wine that are fantastic, both white and red, but predominantly red. So worth seeking out. reds from the Douro. I have a couple more minutes, so let's see. Probably the next most important region, on the main continent, is the Dao, D-A-O, which neighbors Bairata. It's probably the most recognized and important wine, red wine region, the Dao is. However, it's also the loosest in terms of using native varieties, so you will definitely see Cab, Merlot, Syrah, other things like that popping up in blends from the Dao. But it's still, I mean, the wines are still to this day pretty darn good values. And it's contiguous, with this region of Bairata, where the wines, again, sort of range from terrible to great. But if you have a good importer, it's a place where you can kind of find some nice values. Around the capital of Lisbon, you know, they actually have an appellation, but it's like Paris. It's like they don't really grow great stuff around there, if anything at all. Alentejo, south of there, this is where you're getting into that more granite and schisty soils, and this is where you're starting to produce really the level of wines that are being recognized on an international stage as like, oh my God, these things can actually contest with the best. So Alentejo, beautiful reds made of Alicante Busquet, which is one of these reds that has red juice as well as, red skin, tremendously elegant white. So that's worth checking out. And then I mentioned those are all sort of on mainland. The other one that everybody kind of knows but has no freaking idea who might actually control the islands or where it's from or what it is Madeira. Madeira is with the advent of Hamilton being resurgent and stuff like this, Madeira is probably thought of as a very stodgy old white man in white powdered wigs sort of thing. But it's kind of cool. It was one of those wines where they discovered that it wasn't very good on its own, but once they started shipping it around the world, where it went into tropical zones and basically cooked, that it became a really, really good fortified wine. So then they started deliberately putting it on boats and sending it into tropical zones to cook and age, and that, stupid as it sounds, that's what it is. So it's green grape juice cut with brandy, right? So grape brandy, right? Unaged. And then they put it on ships and barrels, and it was used as ballast originally, essentially. And then they're like, wow, this tastes great. They don't so much use the ships anymore. They use fire because practicality, but the point is sort of the same. So, that's kind of an overview of Portugal. It's just tremendous. If you can get there, if any of us can get anywhere again, go and eat chilled grilled octopus and vino verdes and stuff on the coast, and you'll probably have a very affordable and wonderful trip. That said, we have a wonderful wine of the week, which is not Portuguese. It is a white Burgundy, and as I keep mentioning to people, get your Burgundies now, folks, because in 2020 and 2021, they basically didn't make any wine. That's not their choice. That was Mother Nature's choice. So yes, check out our amazingly value-driven white Burgundy as our wine of the week. And next week, we will move on to Italy. I think we'll start in Piedmont. So it should be fun.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you very much, as always, Mr. Meehan. Hope you have a great week, and we'll see you in person next week with you and your quiver.
Unless I am impaled many times by deadly orc arrows, I will be there, sirs.
Keep your head on a swivel at all times.
Very well.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Message in the Bottle.